care, you will go to www.keepoceansclean.org and see what you can do to make a difference. Thank you.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook.
Zillions living
yeah.
in
Hokkaido. Okay, it's time once again for another edition of Off the Wall.
We'll speak with Yemeni scholar Shireen Al-Adeimi, whose recent report is headlined "Attack on Yemen Port Shows U.S.-backed Coalition Willing to Use Starvation as a Weapon." All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Outrage is mounting over the Trump administration's practice of separating immigrant children from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border as part of a crackdown against immigrants and asylum seekers. The Associated Press reports nearly 2,000 children have been separated from their parents since April 19th. The New York Times is reporting some parents have been deported. We'll be right back.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is off the wall. Emmanuel Goldstein joining you tonight. I'm also being joined by Kyle.
Hi. Hey, what's up?
Not much. You know, I sure wish we had the soundproofing option installed when we built this studio, because apparently, I didn't know this at the time, but next door, we're next to the South African Football Fan Association, which honestly I didn't know existed here on campus, and they're just, you should hear them over there, the music. You hear that sound? Sounds like a bunch of bees, a bunch of angry bees. You hear that?
Oh, no, I think, you're mistaking that. That's not what you think it is. That's the sound of hackers getting ready for a conference.
You know, I'd like to believe that. I really would, but I know this sound. I've heard this sound before, and those are vuvuzelas. And our theme is coming to an end. Oh, man. Here's the thing that perplexes me. South Africa didn't even qualify. So, well, it doesn't make any sense to me. But I guess, you know, it's one of the things that we just have to live with here in the studio. We could get some additional soundproofing up, I hope.
Perhaps. I'm not sure how much we have in the budget for that immediately. I know there were a couple other things that we wanted for the station, but it may be necessary. Perhaps some of the more handy and technically inclined could just bring a roll of insulation or distribute cotton balls, and we can jam them into people's ears with the eraser.
Okay.
On a pencil.
I'm open to suggestion. I really am. This is ridiculous. People walking around the building with their hands in their ears, and it's a festive time of year. The World Cup is here. It only happens every 4 years. I can't believe 4 years has gone by since you know what happened to the horror of the Brazilian game to Germany, 7-1. I still can't believe they lost 7-1. That's 6 goals more than what Brazil got is what Germany got, and they got the victory too, and Brazil was eliminated early. I don't want to rub it in. I don't want to keep mentioning it, but 7-1, for God's sake. I was watching on TV the other day, because I like to have the games on in the background as I'm working on other things, and I just heard somebody from Brazil saying, this is a dark part of our history that we will have to live with forever. And they're talking about a football game like other countries talk about genocide. But they're living up, they're not embracing it, but at least acknowledging that it happened much better than other countries do when it comes to dark periods of their history. If that were only the darkest period of their history, that would be really admirable. But, 7-1. Nobody can believe that.
It was a real upset. And I remember at the time just how traumatic it was, especially given the celebratory feel and absolute incredible job the country did preparing and just the real sense of pride and accomplishment for hosting that event. But
yeah, they were the hosts too. That was so sad.
Yeah, it's funny that the upset that came to be the markings or the theme of that particular World Cup, and then of course South Africa, the Vuvuzela came to sort of define that host, and here we are with the Russians having this wonderful celebration at a time when their global image couldn't use it more. Is that right? Couldn't use it more?
Yeah,
could not use it more.
No, that's
at this juncture in time. Yeah, that makes sense. So, and then, of course, the announcement of North America. What will be the tone and themes then?
Oh, you mean 2026?
Yeah, that was announced. But at least
for the folks listening in the future, North America, United States, Canada, Mexico got the right to host the World Cup in 2026.
Woo.
Well, okay, but the timing coming right before the World Cup begins, makes it seem like the United States is victorious in something, when actually we're boycotting these World Games, these World Cup games. Well, we didn't qualify. We lost to Trinidad and Tobago, was it the Panama qualified as a result of that, of losing to Trinidad? But it's not fair. I mean, Trinidad and Tobago, we had to play two teams at once. How fair is that? You know, it's so anti-U.S. sometimes. I see people's points.
Well, in any event, there's much to talk about, at least as far as distinctions go for this particular World Cup. Could not be different-er, more distinct, about-face, a polar contrast to those other World Cups. Now, this one has really been interesting. Russia, obviously, off the bat, as a host, winning, because we like winning, they won against who but the Germans?
No, you got it wrong. They beat Saudi Arabia.
Oh, I'm sorry, Saudi Arabia. Well, who did the Germans lose to?
Mexico beat
The Mexicans.
Germany. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was great. I want Mexico to go all the way. Of course, I want a lot of teams to go all the way. My absolute favorite team, of course, is Iceland.
Yeah, I got
Iceland won. Iceland got, I mean, wow, that's
also,
so cool.
Also, another
wait, they
very...
Didn't, I'm sorry, they didn't win. They beat Argentina 1-1 is what they say. But it was a tie, but it's a victory for Iceland to do that with Argentina.
Yeah, and anyway, the really stories and excitement and just a real interesting look at all these different countries and their fascinating road to this particular World Cup. And the countries involved are varied and interesting and... As, you know, we noted, you know, not the usual suspects, not the people we expect, and it's really a real joy just to follow that, and I don't know.
Except for Ronaldo.
I'm inspired. Oh, sure.
You expect
I mean,
him, and he scored three goals in one damn game. That's just come on already.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Messi, he missed a penalty kick, and he's just beside himself.
Sure, yeah. There is tragedy, there is loss, there is some sadness. And despair, and that is all part of what the World Cup is.
And it's beautiful because it's happening all over the world. I know a lot of people are naysayers, or what good does this do anybody, it's stupid. But, you know, seeing the way people in Iceland were celebrating when they scored that goal against Argentina, how is that a bad thing? Why? Who does that hurt? That's an amazing way for people just to get together and be happy for no particular reason, just because a bunch of people kicked the ball through a goal 1,000 miles away. You know?
Yeah, you see such solidarity and togetherness, mm-hmm. and people just having a really good time and being with one another. And that's the only point, you know, is watching, spectating, sharing a laugh and remarking at the things you see, whether you're there in person or watching from afar. It is such a great, great experience.
It really is. And just to know that in just about every country in the world, people are... Well, not so much this country. I've been trying to avoid the news. I've also been very, very busy working on the upcoming conference. And every time we have a conference, there's either a World Cup or a Euro competition. And these games kind of are clue that we should be involved heavily in conference planning. So... Yeah, you know, I'm kind of staying away from everything because of that, but also I don't want to hear the scores because the games are played early in the morning, our time, and, you know, I see them throughout the course of the day, and I kind of am separated, just working nonstop, isolated, and it's just neat to know that around the planet, everybody is kind of paying attention to all this, and it's kind of, I guess, magic. Is the word I'm looking for.
And really just the right diversion at the right time. I think so many things have been focused on and had taken precedence. And these kinds of events, like the Olympics was a couple months ago, they really represent just, you know, what humanness and relatedness and sort of the culmination of all these things, what we can do when we sort of shed those alliances and tribes and all of that and just enjoy something as simple as a game.
Yeah, yeah. Because, after all, isn't that what it's all about? Just one game after another, and we don't really know what the meaning is. We just try to enjoy for the moment. And okay, that guy's right outside the door. Okay, so, yeah, apparently somebody scored out there. Good. I'm happy for you. Wow. All right, we have to get better soundproofing in here. This is not how a radio station should operate.
No, but you have to go through the university, and it's actually quite a lengthy form. And in fact, I have a stack of papers here that I wanted you to look over, and we're going to actually have to get a board meeting together.
Yes.
To have a resolution to decide.
Oh, I think the game ended. Okay, good. Hope you won. I think that was a winning goal we just heard. Cool.
Mm.
Yes, so continue.
I don't know. I was just going to say it's a multi-part process, and then the resolution needs to be passed along to the officers to then approve the minutes, but then that copy needs to be in duplicate, and the second copy of the duplicate needs to be notarized. Yeah, no, that has to be notarized, and if you don't notarize it, you cannot use digital notary in New York State, so you have to use a real stamp.
You cannot use digital notary in New York. Wait, what does that sentence mean? What did you just say here? You cannot use digital. What is a digital notary?
It's like you just putting clip art on some PDF and calling it a seal. That does not work. No. And then that copy needs to be handed off to the appropriate representative of Stony Brook University, who then blesses it and then sacrifices before the what is it? The High Council?
We have a High Council?
I can't remember who they are.
Well, let's hope they don't remember who you are.
Yeah.
That's really what matters.
No, yeah, the clubs. I don't know who is in charge, actually. And, does it matter?
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. None of this matters. The World Cup doesn't matter. Digital notary publics don't matter. How do I become a digital notary public? That's what I want to know. Well, I guess a digital corporate seal doesn't involve a digital notary, right?
Yeah, actually. So it's like digital signing. When you sign contracts now, you can have digital signatures, but there are sort of guidelines for it. So it has to be this type of file, this type of parameter to be a proper digital signature. Well, in notarizing, there's the same thing, but only, I think, a fraction of the states, about half of them, actually honor the digital seal or a corporate notary in the digital form. So if you're sealing a document or affirming some contract, you can't use a digital seal, which is basically the same thing as a corporate seal that embosses, but it's just basically like clip art that says the agent or company or whatever is affirming the document. So in this era of digital, so you have digital signatures, you have digital seals, and even notaries can use digital files in documents. But as I said, only in certain states. New York is not one.
Well, New York might be a state that legalizes pot soon, from what I understand. Governor Cuomo's health commissioner said yesterday his agency will soon issue a report recommending the legalization of recreational marijuana, possibly setting the stage for a dramatic policy shift for the governor. Dr. Howard Zucker said the health department will release a long-awaited marijuana report in the coming days. That's going to happen this week, probably. We realize that the pros outweigh the cons, and the report recommends a regulated legal marijuana program be available to adults in the state of New York, Zucker said at a news conference in Brooklyn. Now, if the governor backs the report's recommendation, it would complete an extraordinary shift for the Democrat. It also would put him on the same page as Cynthia Nixon, who is the actress and activist who is challenging Cuomo for the Democratic nomination from the political left. It would align New York with a growing number of states that have legalized marijuana. And I think it would change everything in the country. I think if New York did this, you will see a whole bunch of other states follow suit. Do you think so?
Oh, yeah. I think as a leadership thing, I mean, just like California is the second largest economy in the entire country, New York has a huge say in precedent, whether it be sort of a legal or social justice or social issues like this, and I think people will absolutely take note. I mean, if you you understand sort of the legacy of prohibition of cannabis and New York's role in that, it would be, I think, a tidal wave in the opposite direction that they've gone. I think I can say truthfully that it is a lower criminal priority in New York, which, as I've said in the past, is a huge step that Seattle took in this process. But I have a couple words of caution with this, or just some observations. There will be a gap. So if you go in one direction, which we've gone as far as criminalizing, locking individuals up for these crimes and getting them into a system, whether it's over racial bias or other influences, there's a lot of ramifications, a lot. Mm-hmm. My caution is that there will be a gap that you're making a leap from politically as a state, as individual cities, as regions, and as a leader in the country. So you have to accept that if this is the direction that the governor's, whomever it is, goes, and the state goes with whatever influence they have in this election, if it's just a platform thing or if people are really behind it, whatever that is. So that gap is there. You're going to move society to a degree. Okay. And in light of that, there are going to be people who were unjustly treated one way who now, under this new beginning, would be looked at and treated another way. So you have to atone for some of that in this process. The other thing I would caution or observe is that you're going to have you cannot deny, just as you can't deny people have been unjustly treated unfairly, unjustly criminalized due to prohibition, you also have people who have been working in legal gray areas in this sort of zone of black market or scoff laws who otherwise have been trading in cannabis, whether it's from out of state or growing it here locally. I'm sure there is cannabis in New York, Manhattan, and the five boroughs. We did a story a while ago about the cherry company that made Maraschino cherries. The guy that owned it was growing indoor pot and was busted.
Well, you can make a living on Maraschino cherries. Everybody knows that.
Right. Well, and so there are huge benefits to opening this up. I would just say, and my observations is that there's so many different attributes of this. I've only named like one or two things to observe that, you should take it slow. And that is, I think, what Seattle did and a state like New York could do. And they are doing things very slowly.
I don't get, what do you mean by slowly? I want this to happen now. We've had enough transition.
Okay, not slowly, but methodically. Like, really think through, get as many of the stakeholders together, make a good plan, work with everyone involved, mm-hmm. cities, and make sure, not that there's consensus, because there's going to be cities that aren't interested and that want zoning and all this kind of drama.
Right,
and,
Kutchog.
Yeah, exactly. So, to that end, recognize that you have to pull as many people along with you on this social shift, but there will be a lot of people who have been working in the industry, who've been supporting cannabis for a long time, who will feel left out or who will want to come out of the woodwork, so to speak.
Drug dealers are going to be miffed.
Well, I think that there's...
I understand what you're saying.
There are gray market growers. There's people
right.
who are already doing
good people,
this,
yes.
who want to go legit, and if it is legal, they ought to have an opportunity. And I say
and
that...
And not just the millionaires.
I say that because exactly my very next thing, and this happened in Washington, there are good cannabis growers, I'm sure, in New York State. And there are good people that understand the plant and understand the soils and all the details of that out here in New York State. There are going to be people that come in from out of state. This
yes.
happened in Washington. This happened. There are trade shows. I was at an industrial cannabis trade show. There were a lot of sport coats there. There is a lot of money and a lot of interest. There are futures indexes, people trading and trying to
to hit this stuff right as it legalizes. And what I'm saying is there's going to be fraud. There's going to be people who do a bad job.
Right.
There's going to be a boutique crazy businesses that really don't have their heart in it.
So let's keep it local. How about that?
That's the point. That is a great overall attitude to sort of navigate all of these issues that will present, is that it ought to be a lot like the local food movement. It ought to be that a lot of people are growing themselves and not relying on vending machines and weed robots or whatever.
Well, just to give an example of how we have moved, how we have evolved in a relatively short period of time, when Cuomo took office in 2011, that's only 7 years ago, he opposed not only recreational marijuana, he opposed medical marijuana. And he got pushed by state legislators to negotiate a new medical marijuana program in 2014. It took that long. But he still opposed recreational marijuana. He called it a gateway drug. I remember this. And now, you know, we're looking at, I remember Obama basically opposing gay marriage. People change. People evolve. Societies evolve. And politicians have to evolve with that or they get left behind. So I think we're seeing this this groundswell on this and so many other things. And, you know, whenever we get discouraged by all the negative stuff that's going on around us, we should look at something like this and see how much we have moved in a relatively short period of time and realize that the pressure we put on these people, it matters. And acting locally matters. It grows. You know, it started in Washington. It started in Colorado. It's spreading throughout the country now. And soon it will be the entire country, I'm convinced.
Yeah, and I guess the last thing I'll say is that it should be open to everybody. There are calls for, reparations and various things being tied to the tax revenue and so on and so forth. I agree that there should be opportunity for people of color and minorities and people affected negatively by prohibition. But I also think that just in general, the growth and prevalence of this plant should be encouraged on all fronts. And even things like THC levels and, CBD classifications, there's all still a lot of work going on there, and a lot of work needs to be done because there's people dicing up the industry. And again, the politicians involved need to be interested, not because some $3 million companies invested in their campaign and so they came around just by proxy. No. Make sure some of the intent here is pure in the sense of really understanding the entirety of cannabis and its impact on the world.
If you have any thoughts on this, our phone lines are open, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Hey, we were talking a little bit about Trump in North Korea last week because it had just happened. And there's been a lot more talk about it since then. I maintain that him going over there, not to North Korea, but to Singapore and meeting with Kim Jong-un, was a good thing. I'm hearing a lot of pushback, and it's kind of annoying to hear pushback from liberals and Democrats who are upset that he said war games are going to stop with South Korea, as if that's the kind of thing that we would normally say is something we want. This is obviously something we don't want. We don't want war games. We don't want military actions increasing policing of the entire planet by the United States. That is a good thing. Now, of course, we all know Trump is incompetent. We all know he doesn't know what he's doing half the time. Well, more than half the time. We all know he's probably giving away more than he should give away. But let's not just shoot down everything bad that has happened or everything good that has happened here. Because he did it. You know, he basically opened up a door, whether he had ulterior motives or didn't know what he was doing when he opened that door, doesn't negate the fact that he opened the door. That door is now open. Instead of having this population of people stuck in a dark world where they have no access to anything out here, we have no access to them, now we are able to communicate and more doors will be open. Kim Jong-un went to China again to talk to the leaders there. More engagement. Now, yeah, of course, horrible things, starvation, mass killings, all that kind of thing. Yeah, that happened. We all know that happened. If we simply say we're not going to talk to you because you're bad, you wind up basically punishing everybody, and there's no way out. There's never the dialogue. At least now we have a dialogue, all right? if Trump messes it up, which he probably will do, at least there's a chance that we can have intelligent people talk to other intelligent people and get somewhere. There is no harm in that. So I don't know. I caution against people that just want to shoot down everything that happens when it comes from your opponent and not realize that, yeah, you know, some good might have come out of this, not necessarily due to competence, not necessarily due to, you know, positive motives. But we can look at a situation kind of like the World Cup, you know. What good does it do? Why, you know, why bother? Because there's still a lot of misery. Why go to Mars when everything is still all screwed up on Earth? Yeah, sometimes you have to look past that and do things that might not seem to make sense, you know, for the practically minded and look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, it was cringeworthy, I think, moment, sort of the days following, I guess, 42 hours or 48 hours after. It just felt so much like the media itself was leaping on this to prove something or just to be right. And I had to walk away from hearing it and just absorb what had happened, because I think you and I both appreciated, and a lot of people appreciated, just the fact, the mere, just the uniqueness of the moment, that just fascination of, you know, seeing these two worlds, you know, the bodyguards, all the details were just fascinating, and itself was a really interesting moment and something to behold. It did not need punditry immediately, and there are ways of looking at it, and I think it helped getting maybe 2-3 days a little later, a little bit more of a sober attitude. There was certainly foolishness and those things, but I think they're more glaring, they're more obvious in hindsight. So we can look back on the occasion and say, this is how Trump behaved, this is how Kim Jong-un behaved. And you know, body language experts and the framing of the whole thing, like, we're understanding it better in hindsight. And, you know, it just needed a moment, I think, to breathe as a historic event. And then we can sort of assess, okay, what's going on. And of
course, you have that dialogue then. Yes, you can talk.
Yeah. And then we did. We actually had South Korean military officials meet with North Koreans. And presumably this debate over the, quote, war games it was a part of that, and is obviously quite important to the Koreans and people in the neighborhood there. I will say, it may help to have the training, but I really, the presence of the U.S. military, that show of force, it is a constant, okay? And this concession that we won't be doing these sorts of drills, they were, I would say, provocative.
Yeah.
They're necessary, not provocations per se, because they were announced. I mean, they were collaborations with people we're allied with who have valid security concerns and concerns that Trump doesn't want to pay for.
But
in a lot of
they don't
ways.
Have to happen right there, right off the coast of North Korea. They don't have to be provocative in that manner.
And you went exactly to my point, which was, these will continue. They just won't be those war games,
mm-hmm.
Okay? The subs are still there. The aircraft carriers are still there. The air supremacy is still there.
Right, exactly. Nothing changes. And that's the thing. You know, if you just have a dialogue with somebody that could be your enemy, you make what appears to be a concession. You listen to them. You treat them with respect. And the situation gets diffused. This is something cops can learn from. You know, it's a simple thing. And, yeah, if you hold on to your pride, you say, oh, I'm never going to talk to that person unless I do this and this and this. That's what we've been doing for decades. It has not worked out, and it never will.
Yeah, and I think it's more interesting to be in communication and at the sort of your move to the North Koreans. You know,
mm-hmm.
We may have given them a lot. We may have, you know, he may have been on this big, you know, sort of honeymoon of a time negotiating and whatnot. But, you know, if there is no result, if there is not a development, if there is not a direction that, that is chosen, that that, that you know, that there are less military activities, you know, that becomes less important there. I think that that's you know, that's the kind of stuff that people are looking for as proof, and that will dictate the then subsequent meetings and openness and that inevitable future.
We have a call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Speak up.
Good evening, boys. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
Hi.
Doing well. Name is Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Miller Place.
Well, Miller Place, eh?
Yeah.
Great. What's
hey,
up?
I think the climate's changing for recreational marijuana due to Vermont and Massachusetts.
Yes, Massachusetts is coming up.
Yeah, I mean, it all has to do with the tax revenue, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
those
schools.
Two states, you know, pretty much the whole eastern border of New York is bordered by those two states. And, you know, they have recreational marijuana. They've got a tourist industry. They're taking people from our New York tourist industry as well, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a lot better than gambling, having casinos and things like that. You know, if you're going to have extra tax revenue, it seems like this is a better way to go.
Well, the gambling is a completely different conversation. I mean, there's big money in the gambling. There's influence, political influence as well. That hasn't established yet with legalized marijuana because it's just not here yet. But I'm curious to see how that's going to pan out. I would imagine, you know, we'll be talking about this in a few years. Who got the licenses to sell and who they're connected to and whatnot.
Yeah, I actually, I've been following very closely the industrial hemp pilot program, and next week maybe I'll read a list of all the companies because the names are actually really funny. But all the companies that were part of the expansion, that program has been expanded several times. There's now like over 50 industrial hemp growers. And my point with that and all of this is that there is so much innovation that comes just by opening this up, by allowing interstate trade and easing some of the scheduling limitations. The technology around vaporizing, the technology around material sciences, hemp fiber composites and building materials to fabrics and other things are all part of that, and by allowing this industry to flourish and taking some of that revenue from the recreational side, you open up this huge possibility for innovation, and that's one thing that I'm particularly excited about. I mean, just vaporizers alone have improved so much given the amount of support from states like Washington and Colorado. The science behind potency and all of that is all developing, the diagnostics and those abilities, and including medical development. So it's really exciting stuff, and it's all by accepting that as a state and a nation, you really allow this flood of innovation and high technology to come with it.
I agree with everything you said. I think those are more byproducts of an industry that's already established, which is great. But I think the conversation was more geared towards, at the time you were speaking of it, why the political climate is changing. And I think loss of tax revenue, I think Cynthia Nixon's conversations about how it affects the penal system and how she's for it, and mm-hmm. I think that's why everybody's kind of flip-flop up in Albany at this point.
Maybe evolve is a better word than flip-flop, you know?
You're
probably right. They are politicians, after all.
Well, and also, your comment about the climate, I mean, there are not very many other things going on that are so great, and I think this is something that at this juncture, as you said, there are real advantages, possibilities, and budget shortfalls that this could fill those gaps. So it may be just that as you said, the timing, and that is a crucial point. I appreciate your comment.
Yeah, I would be curious to see where the money goes once it happens. That's again another conversation, but in any case,
well, we may
appreciate you guys taking the time out.
Thank you for your call.
All right, take care.
All right, good night. Well, our phone number is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Getting back to North Korea for a second, did you have a chance to look at that film that Trump delivered to Kim Jong-un?
Yeah, I saw it a couple times.
Okay, we have it here in the studio, and we're going to play it, and we're going to watch it. Obviously, you can't watch it on the radio. We have it on full screen here on the Mac, which is probably going to crash the Mac. It happens if your Mac is over a year old. But we're gonna keep an open commentary going as this thing plays.
7 billion people inhabit planet Earth. Of those alive today, only a small number will leave a lasting impact. And only the very few will make decisions or take actions that renew their homeland and change the course of history.
What do you think? You think he's gonna buy any of this?
Repeat itself for generations.
No.
Well, it's basically
that's my dad.
It's so obviously just meant to get Kim Jong-un's attention, but it's kind of patronizing the way it speaks down to him and says this guy has one chance to get it right.
Evolving, and there comes a time when only a few are called upon to make a difference.
That's a big picture of Kim Jong-un and Trump.
What difference will the few make? The past doesn't have to be the future. Out of the darkness can come the light, and the light of hope can burn bright.
And you know, he's like, I don't have one more chance. I have about 60 chances.
As many chances as I can make up. But to show that famous picture of North Korea in the dark being suddenly lit up because you decided to play ball. I just think that it's so patronizing, don't you?
I guess you're right. Yeah, that could be patronizing.
And what is this Destiny's Pictures Presents? Is this a motion picture or what? Who are those guys? It's just, it's really not that polished. It's, it reads like a propaganda film, so I guess that's something he would be very familiar with.
There's a lot of clip art. It's a lot of stock video.
You see the basketball there? There's a guy sinking a basketball, whatever. We know that Kim Jong-un likes basketball, so that's why that's there. It's all so transparent.
Only be two results. One of moving back.
That's kind of a threat, don't you think? Let's move back to exploding things and... let's move forward and be friends with the U.S. I mean, that's the message that, you know, should be conveyed. It's just, I can't believe, whose idea was this to come up with a propaganda film to hand to the chief propagandist in the world? I would love to hear his actual comments about this.
Yeah, the critique, yeah, like you call that propaganda, really? You think I think this is cool?
They got kids on bumper cars, North Korean kids on bumper cars. I guess that's positive. They have pictures of trains. Why can't we get trains? You're saying we're going to modernize this country and build high-speed rail. Let's work at home and get that here as well. Everyone else seems to be getting it.
Is it Infrastructure Day yet?
I don't know.
Infrastructure Week?
It comes to...
Infrastructure year?
On this day, in this time, at this moment, the world will be watching, listening, anticipating, hoping. Will this leader choose to advance his country and be part of a new world? Be the hero of his people? Will he shake the hand of peace and enjoy prosperity like he has never seen? A great life or more isolation? Which path will be chosen? Featuring President Donald Trump and Chairman Kim Jong-un.
This is featuring, like it's some kind of epic thing that's coming out.
History.
Wow.
To shine in the sun. One moment, one choice. What if? The future remains to be written.
Well, that's never been said before. Okay, well, if you want to see the whole thing, it's on YouTube. You can see the whole thing without us talking over it. But, you know, I never react well when someone's showing me something that's referring to me in the third person that they made. They could just talk to me directly. You know, will Kyle do the right thing? I'm looking at you right now and asking, are you going to, clean up this mess here in the studio when we walk out the door? Or will Kyle leave this for Finn to clean up? Will Kyle do the right thing, or will Kyle go back into the world of darkness?
I never left.
See, you don't look happy, so I know it doesn't land well. But I'd love to hear what he had to say about that.
Mm.
What Kim Jong-un had to say. And who's Destiny Pictures? Who are these people, and what films do they make? Make sure you don't see them.
Yeah, it seems like a public relations video, or like a just really simple pitch. As I said, like a lot of clip art and that sort of thing. Stock video images, rather. And it just seemed extra. Like,
it's tacky.
Why did we need this?
You had the meeting with Kim Jong-un. You don't need to have this third rate.
I feel like the
promotional
South Park guys could have done a better.
Oh, he's probably a fan of that. That would have been a good idea. See, why don't they listen to us? Why don't you guys listen to us? So, that would have been so cool.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. He would have loved that. He'd be in Colorado now getting autographs, man. Anyway, he seemed to be more fascinated by the iPad they were playing it on than the actual film itself. I still think it's cool that we're talking. When I went over there, I thought it was amazing just to be able to see people and learn what life is like for the people I saw, obviously not everybody, and to engage, to, maybe put forth an image that goes against what they've been taught, to receive an image that goes against what I've been taught. But you have to have those interchanges. You have to have those exchanges of people and cultures if you're going to advance, or you can keep building walls and keep telling stories about each other. And live the way you've been living. So, occasionally we stumble into the right place. I think that's exactly what happened here. We stumbled into a good thing. Now we resume dealing with all the crap that's going on, and we don't have enough time to get into it all, but some really, really nasty things going on in the name of our government, in the name of the people here, specifically our borders, what's happening to children, being torn apart from their parents, and we're just learning about the things that are happening right now. We're learning about kids being thrown into old Walmarts and not knowing where their parents are, simply because they're looking for a better life, simply because their parents come to this country seeking asylum. As if that is a crime, as if that isn't something that so many of our ancestors and relatives have done and been celebrated for doing it. It's sickening. It's sickening to see the attitudes and just the way people are behaving. And I'm very worried for the future. Trump is easy to identify as a buffoon and an idiot. It's a lot harder to nail down the people that you know that say things that are just filled with hatred and fear and ignorance. Get them to see that that is not actually what's going on. I mean, immigration to this country, illegal immigration, has first of all gone way down over the last decade or so. It's not a security issue. It's being portrayed as a security issue. At most, it's an economic issue, and I think it's an economic issue that actually benefits us because people are doing jobs here that nobody in this country seems to want to do. But to portray it as something that is actually a threat to our safety demonizes innocent people and creates all kinds of victims that it simply is a crime against humanity to put people in that position. Same thing going on in Europe. You're seeing all this fear and hatred towards people who are trying to escape oppressive regimes. And, I get it. You can't fit everybody from an oppressive regime in Western civilization. But what you can do, you can try and help those repressive regimes become something better. Because odds are you've played a part in the repressive regime at some point in the past. And I think it's all of our obligations to even the scale just a little bit so that all these people aren't trying to move from their homes. I'm sure people don't really want to do that. But just to live a decent life. That is all anybody wants, is to live a decent life. How is it we can't seem to see that? How is it that we view that with suspicion and hostility? And we're seeing the ugliness of that in our own country right now, happening with the most vulnerable of individuals, namely children being torn apart. I mean, I've been seeing videos, hearing audio, pictures, all kinds of horrible things. Thankfully, there are reporters out there getting the story. We've never needed reporters more. We've never needed a free press more than we have needed it right now.
Yeah, they had representatives from the pediatricians, American Pediatricians Group or Association, as representatives, senators, obviously at the state and federal level that are interested in visiting these sites.
Mm-hmm.
I know I go back to this and so on, but it's just a shame that we are using this stuff. We're victimizing people, but the symptoms came about from greed and came about, I think, from capitalism to a degree. And the fact that we cannot apologize, or we can't say, maybe our system, parts of our system, we can't even establish a critique of our system. We will not apologize. It's very much like the non-apologies from the leadership right now. But we can't even look for a moment at capitalism and say, boy, this has really brought about, optimizing and making efficiencies and profit-seeking. This has really brought about a situation where, people won't, work and these immigrants are coming here because their countries have been exploited by multinational and transnational firms that have Delaware. It is all interconnected, and globalization itself has been virulent, has been everywhere, has been all over the place. And I just feel like it's so simplistic and stupid of us to look at our border and say this is blame solely lies with other people and the
right.
other, and then they then become a manifestation and the outlet for our frustration.
The thing that really gets me, though, is when all this started, and we can all remember this, we were told that only those criminals were going to be thrown out of the country, only people who were a danger to our society. And you can see that was a lie, because totally innocent people who have lived here since they were 5 years old, are being thown out of the country.
Yeah.
And there are these jackbooted thugs known as ICE going around. It's happening here. It's happening on Long Island. It's happening in New York. They're raiding places where they think there are people that are undocumented. And can you imagine the terror? You can't imagine the terror. If you have not been in that situation, you cannot imagine it. But to be able, to go through a day living like this is something that precious few of us ever have to worry about. It's part of their daily lives. They can't be seen in public because somebody, just like that pizza delivery guy in Brooklyn, might get reported because he looks foreign and then thrown out of the country because he didn't have the right paperwork and torn away from his family when he's done nothing wrong. It's insane. This has got to stop. We have got to stop it. We've got to shut down ICE. We've got to shut down the people that have started this horrible chain of events, because I'll tell you, this does not end well. This does not go down a happy road. It's something that we've seen before in history, and it only gets worse from this point unless we do something about it. And, ask yourself, in 20, 30, 40 years, when you tell people the story about when people were being rounded up in their homes and places of work and deported to places where they are killed or face all kinds of horrors, what were you doing? What were you doing? Were you helping that? Were you fighting that? Were you trying to get the word out? Think about that, because I guarantee that's a conversation you will be having down the road.
Yeah, and consider that this was this fear came about from the changing demographics and the obviously the administration of Obama, but 50% of the country now or by a certain, by 2030 will be of a Latin American descent or not Caucasian, God forbid. I mean, these are a social group that is absolutely fearful of the demographic changes in this country. They're now in power, and they are executing their solution, their last-ditch solution to save their whiteness, and it's being mechanized, right? This scope creep and so on,
The scope creep's going to have to creep to 50% of our population. What is that? You know, we have to really look at what this is, because if they're, you know, pushing the goal line a little bit further and a little bit further, you know, this, how is this not about preserving whiteness and keeping brownness subjugated?
Yeah, I mean, you are absolutely right in saying this, but it goes to the very basics of human rights and human decency, and we are better than that. Regardless of color, regardless of religion, this is not who we are. We have to keep saying that. We have to keep remembering that. We have to be telling everybody this and acting on it. And I just hope that's what we do in the days, weeks, months ahead. We're going to need to do that. It's going to get really, really ugly really, really soon unless some steps are being taken. Hopefully we'll have time to talk about more of this next week. Hopefully things will get better next week. Hey, I'm glad you brought up goal lines, because this song is kind of about soccer. It's kind of about Brazil. Hopefully they'll do better this this year, although they're not off to a really good start. They, I think, tied Switzerland, which was unexpected. We'll be back next week. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Stay tuned for Finn. And, have a fun night. Watch the World Cup. Keep your eyes out for ICE raids. Do whatever you can to stop them. And we'll be doing the same.
Good night.
Bye.